the idea that drag is transphobic fancy dress is complete nonsense. And we've always felt there's a singular profundity in that expression, you know, you're born naked and the rest is drag.
We identify with and connect with outsiders because we grew up as outsiders. That's what all of our work is about.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Pressure builds in Uganda for a revived Anti-Homosexuality Act. Two U.S. states are deemed dangerous for queer U.K. travelers. And drag artists and other outsiders orbit the world of wonder. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Carol Myers.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending April 23rd, 2016. The Speaker of Uganda's Parliament wants to renew what the online Ugandan Insider called her war on homosexuals. The Anti-Homosexuality Act was originally passed in December 2013, punishing private, consensual adult gay sex with up to life in prison. Speaker Rebecca Kadaga described it as a Christmas gift to the nation. President Yoweri Museveni, who routinely railed against gay people, enthusiastically signed it. But Uganda's highest court overturned the law less than a year later because Kadaga didn't have a quorum when lawmakers passed the bill. The Constitutional Court blamed her directly, writing that the illegal act of the speaker tainted the process and rendered it a nullity. Kadaga told a national political talk show this week that she's encouraging supporters of the resurrected Anti-Homosexuality Act to push for its passage in Parliament. President Museveni, who first gained power in 1986, once said that reviving the bill was not a priority after the original measure suffered widespread international condemnation and threatened loss of vital Western financial aid. But Museveni was re-elected in February, and some human rights activists fear that he may be emboldened to renew his vicious attacks against the LGBT community, thereby stoking an already incendiary situation for sexual minorities in the East African country.
An ultra-Orthodox Jew was convicted this week in Israel for stabbing 16-year-old Shira Banki to death and attempting to murder six others at last year's Jerusalem LGBT Pride Parade. Yeshai Schlissel had been released from prison just 3 weeks before last July's parade after serving a 10-year attempted murder sentence for his knife attack on three Jerusalem Pride marchers in 2005. The Jerusalem District Court was highly critical of police officials for not being able to stop Schlissel, even though he publicly threatened to attack Pride marchers again. The court called the lapse unconscionable. Six senior police officials were removed from their posts because of those failures. A psychiatric evaluation of Schlissel found him responsible for his actions and fit to stand trial. Legal proceedings have been complicated, however, because he continues to refuse counsel and says he doesn't accept the legitimacy of the court. The judge announced the convictions on April 19th and scheduled the sentencing hearings for June 16th, but he already noted the absurdity of Schlissel ever being let out of prison without any supervision.
Some of its more vocal users threatened to abandon the Australian telecom giant Telstra last week because the company had apparently bowed to pressure from the Roman Catholic Church and said it was ending its vocal support for civil marriage equality. The Archdiocese of Sydney had written to many of more than 800 national and international businesses to question their endorsement of the advocacy group Australian Marriage Equality. But Telstra is now once again publicly promoting equality. CEO Andy Penn told national broadcaster SBS on April 18th that, "Last week we announced that we would not add further to the debate on marriage equality ahead of a plebiscite or parliamentary debate. It is clear," he said, "that rather than Telstra stepping back, we should in fact step forward and support our view for marriage equality, and so that is what we will do." Telstra's main rivals, Optus and Vodafone, also support civil marriage equality. So the church's veiled message to Telstra that it might take its substantial business elsewhere seemed like an empty threat. But, Penn added, By renewing our active position, we acknowledge that we are at equal risk of inflaming a new debate, but it is the right thing to do.
Guidelines published by the British Foreign Office this week caution UK LGBT citizens traveling to North Carolina and Mississippi to keep a low profile because of those US states' recently enacted anti-LGBT laws. The advisory joins Foreign Office warnings to British LGBT people about visiting Russia, Turkey, or predominantly Muslim countries for similar reasons. The new U.S. travel guidelines warn that laws vary from state to state. When you are physically present in a state, even temporarily, you are subject to that state's laws. Barack Obama happened to be visiting Britain this week, probably his last official visit as president. He called for the discriminatory laws to be overturned, but assured queer Brits that they'd be safe in those two states.
I want everybody here in the United Kingdom to know that the people of North Carolina and Mississippi are wonderful people. They are hospitable people. They are beautiful states. And you are welcome. And you should come and enjoy yourself. And I think you'll be treated with extraordinary hospitality. I also think that the laws that have been passed there are wrong. And although I respect their different viewpoints, I think it's very important for us not to send signals that anybody is treated differently.
In other news, a major U.S. federal appeals court ruling affirming the rights of a transgender student in Virginia is expected to have a direct impact on bathroom bills in other states, including North Carolina's. Those laws require trans people to use public restrooms, locker rooms, and other sex-segregated facilities that match their birth gender, even if their gender identity is different. Female-to-male Virginia teen Gavin Grimm sued his school board after he was ordered to use a campus restroom that corresponded to his biological gender. Even before he began treatment for gender dysphoria, the lawsuit charged, girls and women who encountered Gavin in female restrooms reacted negatively because they perceived Gavin to be a boy. The Fourth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled 2-1 on April 19th that the order against Gavin violated Title IX of the Education Act of 1972, which bans bias based on sex, and ordered a lower court that had ruled differently to re-examine the case. Any legal challenge to North Carolina's HB2 would also be heard by the Fourth Circuit, so its decision in the Virginia transgender teen case could also spell the death of the anti-trans law in the Tar Heel State. The sponsor of Tennessee's bathroom bill temporarily pulled her proposal from consideration this week for what she called further study.
The National Basketball Association continues to pressure North Carolina lawmakers to take another look at HB2, warning this week that next year's NBA All-Star Game will be moved out of Charlotte if the law isn't changed. The News and Observer reports that HB2 has already cost the state millions of tourism dollars and, according to the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau, some $28 million in future spending is at stake. Boston, Pearl Jam, and Duran Duran joined the growing list of entertainers this week to either cancel gigs in North Carolina or donate the proceeds of their shows to local LGBT advocacy groups. And the Daily Beast reports that calls to transgender suicide hotlines have more than doubled since Republican Governor Pat McCrory signed HB2 into law March 24th. The latest polls show the seemingly clueless McCrory, who continues to defend the law, losing his re-election bid in November to current Attorney General Roy Cooper, a Democrat. Cooper has said he won't defend the clearly unconstitutional HB2 in court. The Republican-dominated state legislature begins its short session in the coming week. Some observers predict, despite mounting pressure, that they're unlikely to make significant changes to the law.
And finally, Mississippi suffers a growing backlash against its sweeping so-called religious freedom law, HB 1523. It allows people in the private and public sectors to discriminate against LGBT people or any other people they don't like based on sincerely held religious belief or moral conviction. GoGo's founder Belinda Carlisle, who said she considered canceling a scheduled concert in Mississippi before using it to speak out against the law, has a gay son.
As a proud mother of a gay son, I can't imagine anything less Christian than using the law as a weapon against others. It is my call as a mother to try to bring a little bit of heaven to Mississippi and compliment the incredible bravery of those who continue to organize and fight here long after I'm gone.
Republican Governor Phil Bryant, meanwhile, belittled Canadian rocker Bryan Adams for canceling his concert in Biloxi because of HB 1523, and continues to falsely claim that the far-reaching anti-LGBT law in Mississippi is no different than laws passed in several other states.
We have one guy from the 1980s that cancels a concert. We all want to talk about that. It is interesting. The media says, you know, y'all ought to be dealing with these important issues and not some issue about someone's deeply held religious belief, not going to take anyone's rights away from them. It simply says the government cannot discriminate against people of faith or religious organizations, which is the same law. If I could get anyone to look at that, I can give you a copy of it, the same law that Governor Cuomo signed into a law in New York in 2011.
Saturday Night Live comic actor Tracy Morgan, who himself once came under fire for insensitive homophobic comments, has canceled a scheduled stand-up performance in Tunica, Mississippi because of the law. But outperformer in Clinton, Mississippi native Lance Bass was back in his hometown this week helping to plant a community garden. He says he's organizing events in Mississippi, not canceling them. "I learned in church that you always fight hate with love," he said.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 23rd, 2016. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Carol Myers.
I'm Edmund White. It is the overwhelming international flavor of the lesbian and gay rights movement that has proved so powerful over the past couple of decades. And one radio program has been there to record, to inform, and to entertain. So please keep listening to This Way Out on this station.
In the drag race between Rue and Mini Rue, a short story about the smaller size comes in first.
The RuPaul Doll, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. RuPaul Andre Charles, better known as RuPaul, is an American drag performer, actor, model, and singer-songwriter. Gaining fame in the 1990s on television shows and films, he launched a reality show in 2009 called RuPaul's Drag Race. With popularity comes your own doll, and the RuPaul doll made its debut in 2005. The doll was created by Integrity Toys and designed by Jason Wu, who also designed First Lady Michelle Obama's inaugural ball gown. The box says, 99% plastic, 1% woman. The RuPaul doll comes in many styles, including supermodel RuPaul, red hot RuPaul, and glamazon RuPaul, all with that over-the-top look. Take your pick. They're ready to sashay down the runway. This Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Glenn Lash in Philadelphia.
Inside Deep Throat, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, Million Dollar Listing, Mapplethorpe, Look at the Pictures, and the RuPaul Drag Race. They're among the progeny of Hollywood's reality TV and documentary production house, World of Wonder. Our entertainment reporter Steve Pride explores World of Wonder's history and future with its empire-building co-founders.
Dancing in the
The four World of Wonder founders, Randy Barbato and Fenton Bailey, ran a reality TV empire. They were a disco pop rock duo called the Fabulous Pop-Tarts, performing at clubs in downtown New York City. They formed World of Wonder in 1981 to self-distribute their records and promote the neophyte careers of fabulous friends like RuPaul.
Yeah.
I'm Randy Barbato.
I'm Fenton Bailey. Randy and I met in the East Village in the 80s, and we went to a club called The Pyramid, and we saw these amazing drag shows. And we looked at each other and we were like, this is art. This is incredible. This is great work. This should be seen beyond the Pyramid. The idea that drag is men in dresses, or the idea that drag, to use politically correct terminology, is transphobic fancy dress, is complete nonsense. It is the ultimate creative act of taking the canvas of your body and inventing something rich and strange, not necessarily with a lot of money, but using the power of imagination, because that's what it is. And we've always felt there's a singular profundity in that expression, you know, you're born naked and the rest is drag. We're all in a kind of uniform, and that uniform is, like it or not, a kind of chosen presentation or image. It's all drag. And by drag, I mean true creativity, real imaginative work that it is significant.
Fenton and I, when we met in the 80s in the East Village, back when the East Village was the East Village, we were going to NYU Film School. We used to cut classes to go to the Pyramid happy hour. And truly, we'd quit film school and enrolled at the Pyramid. It really was the turning point for us. And it has been to this day. I mean, so many of the people that we met there now, we're still friendly with. They continue to inspire us. And it makes sense. We identify with and connect with outsiders because we grew up as outsiders. That's what all of our work is about. And it's not only about people who are on the fringe, but it's about that commitment to helping people who don't identify with that understand that actually we're all outsiders. We all, whether it's Mapplethorpe or Tammy Faye or Monica Lewinsky or RuPaul, it's about their humanity. It's about what we have in common with people who we perceive as being other. The reality is they aren't other, they are us. That's who we are. And that's who we have always been. That's who we've always been attracted to. And our life's work has been about sharing those people, those worlds with everybody else and getting other people to understand, actually, you know what? That's who you are.
Your life's work has been so prolific. I went on IMDb this morning thinking I'll just run through these real quick, and they just kept paging down, paging down, paging down.
We work with a lot of people, though. We have a production company called World of Wonder. It's a production company filled with artists, filled with outsiders, filled with people like us who make great things. So we're blessed.
World of Wonder actually did not begin as what it is today. It was to represent the fabulous Pop-Tarts. And that your relationship with RuPaul goes all the way back to those days.
Our relationship with Ru does go back a long way.
I saw the video for Whore on YouTube.
That was from the Christmas special. Yeah, the Christmas special we did for Channel 4, where the Meatpacking District was still then the Meatpacking District. Yes. And we shot that commercial for RuPaul's Whore, for She Who Is.
We've known RuPaul for over 30 years.
We were playing in Atlanta, performing in Atlanta, and Ru introduced us. And I think we knew then that Ru really was the one who belonged on stage.
Yes, we were just like...
rather than us.
We've known from the moment we first saw Ru that, oh my God, every minute he's not on TV is a crime to humanity. He was fully realized.
Absolutely.
30 years ago. He was saying, everybody say love, you're born naked and the rest is drag. Then he was complete. And we could have these kinds of conversations we had with him then. He was spiritual. He had a vision. He had a list of the things he wanted to accomplish in his life. Don't you remember when we saw him in Atlanta and he was wheat posting posters that said RuPaul is everything? It was like, oh my God.
Oh my God, yes. Randy and I just looked at each other and was like, that mother's a star. We really did feel that he was a star. And it was just a question of the rest of the world catching up. And ultimately, we think it's a really good thing because We are in an age when, with the rise of Donald Trump, with the refugee crisis, with terrorism, we need to keep open hearts and open minds. There's a lot of messaging out there to close down and to shut people out, but that is not the way forward. And I just think that someone like Rue and the 100-plus drag queens now that have been on Drag Race, uh-huh. you know, they really help us to open our hearts and open our minds. And the work of Robert Mapplethorpe and, you know, the incredible artistry of Big Frida and even, you know, Frederick and Ryan from yeah. Million Dollar Listings. The great thing is these are all characters who live their life out loud. You don't have to be gay, but who just without apology, without shame, have the courage to be themselves and not let other people's ideas silence them or not edit themselves to accommodate themselves to this false idea of normality. Because, as Randy said, normality doesn't exist. We're all ultimately a minority of one. So everyone's a little bit gay.
When people start talking down on reality television, it always makes you think that's not one thing. There are several kinds of reality television. There's several levels of quality and integrity.
And really, ultimately, all of it, reality scripted, unscripted, competition elimination, whatever you want to call it, it's really all storytelling.
We don't like to trash other TV, but I do think our stuff is stuff we're attracted to. So there's some things out there we're never going to make because we're not attracted to it. We're not really into violence, so we're not going to make table-tossing shows. We and the people who we work with just work on stuff we're passionate about. So there's some stuff out there that I don't particularly like, and I know we're never going to be doing that stuff because we're not passionate about it. Life's too short.
Two queens stand before me. Ladies, this is your last chance to impress me and save yourself from elimination. The time has come for you to lip sync for your life.
Do you think the show has changed drag?
I think that the show hasn't changed drag. I think it has created more opportunity. I mean, the interesting thing and the thing that we're completely committed to with Drag Race is there's a winner every season, but everyone's a winner who's on Drag Race. We're committed to just growing drag and growing the art of drag and using Drag Race to create that interest and excitement about this art form. And what's great about this show, and it's unique to it, to all other competition reality shows, is that we have 100 drag queens who have been on that show, and almost all of them have careers now. They get booked. They make money. We have kind of reinvigorated people's interest in drag, which is so important. It's so important, especially now, because drag queens are the Marines of the LGBTQ community. Their high heels are the boots. They have fought for the cause from day one. They threw the brick at Stonewall. They don't get the respect they deserve. And this show, yes, it's a TV show and it's entertainment and there's fun and there's joy, but it is political. We do believe for so long that these artists have gone unrecognized. And it's great that it's had the life that it's had. And knock wood, it will continue because the longer it's on, the broader it can be, the more types of queens we can include. You know, we have pageant queens, comedy queens, fishy queens. We're growing it to represent all the different types of artists who are in drag. And by the way, now we also have DragCon, which this year will be the second year, May 4th at the Los Angeles Convention Center. Last year, there were 14,000 people at DragCon. There were families, children, all kinds of drag queens. And this year, it's going to be double the size. So we've really tapped into a tribe of people out there, people who love drag, people who do drag. And our commitment is to make it as inclusive as possible. And, you know, it's hard. It's challenging because we can only have like 10 queens a year on. And it's funny, after the first couple seasons, people are like, well, you're going to run out of drag queens. Uh-uh. No, we aren't, because there's a whole new generation of young drag queens. Plus, the older drag queens, now are understanding it's okay to be on Drag Race.
So Drag Race is really a platform or a stage. I suppose you could say that traditionally TV has been drag queen resistant. Drag queens belong on TV, no question. The small screen is perfect for the big visuals and the big hats. It's just perfect medium.
First came Drag Race, then DragCon. The next thing for us is drag TV. I mean, we want a network just filled with drag queens.
You have a YouTube channel now, correct?
Yes, WOW Presents, where a number of the girls, like Alyssa Edwards, there are a number of queens who have shows on WOW Presents.
What is the best part of being you?
Wow. Well, I guess the best part is it doesn't feel like work. Yeah, sure, it's hard work, but it's really more fun and enjoyable. And we really do love what we do and feel really lucky to be able to do it. And I think that's the best part.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it gets challenging when you're making TV and when you're dealing with people who are attracted to the lights. Sometimes they get it twisted and they forget that there's actually room for everyone at the table. So that can be challenging. But when that's not part of the equation, when people get, I love it when people get what we're doing, that we're just trying to bring more people to the table. DragCon is such, like, that's a great thing. That's one of the best things what's the best thing about being you is getting to do something like DragCon, because it's the total manifestation of everything we're about. And everyone gets to participate in the different ways that you want to. Like, there's enough room for everyone. You know, there are a few queens who like it's never big enough, it's never enough. But increasingly, I think people get that that's what we're about, and that's really rewarding.
This has been a conversation with World of Wonder founders Randy Barbato and Fintan Bailey. Find more information at worldofwonder.net. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones, Carol Myers, Glenn Lash, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and Steve Pride, produced by Steve Pride, contributed program material. RuPaul performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener supporters, for making this program possible. You'll find more information about the show, the crew, a video teaser for our special From Outlaws to In-Laws compilation CD, and more at thiswayout.org. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KUNM Albuquerque, New Mexico, WRNC Ashland, Wisconsin, 4ZZZ Brisbane, Queensland, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.